welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors. For each episode, we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are looking at the legendary Neil Breen and his 2013 film Fateful Findings. Returning on the show today to discuss Fateful Findings, Professor Marie Wester. Professor Wester, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me back.
So the first question is very simple. We talk about this movie. I just want you to tell me, in your opinion, what is the plot of Fateful Findings?
I think the plot is some guy with a lot of money decided to make a movie about himself, aggrandizing himself and setting himself up as irresistible to all women, and not one moment of it is believable. Along the way, there's like a smoke monster and a mystical story and a magical day and a guy who kills himself, and the guy, you know, with him in the scene cannot believe that he committed suicide, ending with
greatest scene ever
of rant in front of the Capitol, which looks like a matte painting, and a lot of thrown books and laptop abuse. What do you think?
Yes.
It's
pretty close.
Oh, and lots of close-ups of feet.
Yes. I was like, what am I watching, a Quentin Tarantino movie? But
where to start?
Yeah. I will say this. I asked you, but it's like, were you able to finish this movie in one sitting?
Well, it took me a couple of sittings because I was doing other things. But while I was watching, I was thinking, oh, he is like so much older than that woman who's supposed to be his wife. And then I'd go finish something, come back and be like, who's this? Oh, the next door neighbor. Of course, she's going to throw herself at him, too. And the kid. Everybody. Yeah. Every time I tuned back in, I kept thinking, what is this? What is this mess? And then I'm going to have to ask Alex why you like this movie.
It is a definition of a so bad it's good. I will say, what I always look for in these movies that are so bad they're good is the delusional filmmaker. The best, like you talk about somebody who's irresistible to women, or, you know, everybody just loves him in the film story. It's very similar to, have you seen The Room yet?
No, and I was looking up what other people thought of it, thinking maybe I'm missing something. Or maybe there's a larger meaning or something to appreciate that I'm not getting. No, everybody pretty much panned it. But they all mentioned The Room, and they all talk about how The Room is actually a great piece of cinematic filmmaking, and this, not so much.
Yeah, because The Room is also directed by a guy who's in love with himself, Tommy Wiseau. I mean, I could do the Tommy Wiseau impressions, but everybody does it. You're tearing me apart, Lisa. Oh, hi, Mark. On and on and on is what he does. But he backed his own money. I mean, he had this amount of money. Nobody knows to this day where it comes from. Financed it. Everybody. He got all these people who on the film who were somewhat professionals in the business. One of the person who's credited as the real director of the film, he actually worked a bit with Janusz Kaminski, who is Spielberg's cinematographer. So he got a bunch of professionals, and they were trying to tell him, like, look, Tommy, this is how you shoot it. This is how you do it. And he goes, we make real Hollywood movie, guys. I am the director here. I know the creative decisions. And in the movie, just like in this, he's like this great guy. Everybody just loves him. And the thing is, everybody just betrays him, and it's terrible because Johnny is such a great guy. And of course, Tommy Wiseau plays himself in that movie.
Does he come across as a great guy? Or a guy who thinks he's a great guy?
A guy who thinks he's a great guy.
Because one of the things that makes it unbelievable is that the main character in this movie, Fateful Findings, talks in a monotone.
Yeah,
so even
talks.
If he was really compelling, he would bore all women within 5 seconds.
The thing is, I guess I should talk about how I came across this movie.
After the terrible accident, I'm sure.
Yes, I found a magical stone that healed my powers. There was this YouTube movie review group called Red Letter Media. They are best known for, they did like the Mr. Plinkett reviews, if you're familiar with them. Seven, 8 years ago, they did a review. Mr. Plinkett reviews the Star Wars prequel trilogy. And he talks like this, like the famous opening line of one of the reviews, like, Star Wars The Phantom Menace was the most disappointing thing since my son. And so,
wow.
It's kind of this weird, dark humor, but it's like, you, also like dissects like every aspect of what was wrong with the prequels in a very good, convincing way. It's not completely just for laughs. He makes some good points. That launched that. I know a long story, but that launched this YouTube group, and they've been huge ever since. Anyway, they also do a review series called The Best of the Worst, where people like send them in like all these crappy movies. And one of them was a Neil Breen film, not this one, but it was called Double Down. And honestly, if you've seen one Neil Breen film, you've seen them all.
Okay.
And they were just they were just in absolute shock. And just like I asked you, they asked one of the members, can you describe to me what the plot of this movie is? And he goes, he's like this great guy who's the best at everything he does. There's a lot of laptops, you know.
None of which are turned on.
He's got something that can cure cancer. It is just, and like, so I saw, oh my God, I got to see this movie. This looks amazing. And I saw Double Down, and it's very similar to this movie. Then I saw, what else has he done? I saw Fateful Findings. I haven't seen the rest of his stuff. Twisted Pair is the film that just came out in theaters. I know you're going to be clamoring to get to see that.
First one in line.
And there's one of the best titles. He has a film that's called I Am Here, Ellipses, Now. I don't even know what that's supposed to mean.
Okay.
And there's another one I forget that came out like 2 years ago, but
it's like straight up the mystery science theater.
Yeah, it is
kind
like
of
a mystery science theater.
But you need the pop-up guys to laugh with you because apparently Neil Breen is taking himself completely 100%
seriously. But yeah, he's not as well, I wrote down, he's not as well known as a Tommy Wiseau. Like The Room, I mean, that's a legendary thing. My opinion on Tommy Wiseau is he's built his entire career on that one film. And I think he's like, if you look at what other things he's done, he's tried to be sort of tongue-in-cheek, like trying to recreate that magic, but he's forcing it. He's being too self-aware. He did some little internet miniseries called Neighbors, which is, everyone says, is as bad as The Room, but like not like in that so bad it's good kind of way, just so bad. And then he's trying to do a couple other things, but it's pretty much The Room everyone knows him for. And of course, that was turned into a book by one of the guys who worked with him. And then that was turned into the movie that came out last year with James Franco in it. And it's like this huge cult. It's one of the biggest cult films. Like, it tours around everywhere. So Tommy Wiseau is pretty well known. Ed Wood. I mean, that's mm-hmm. the one everybody goes to. I mean, not only with Plan 9 from Outer Space, but, you know, they'll think of the Tim Burton movie, which is a classic. You know, those two were the ones, the go-tos for, like, so bad they're good. And then, like you said, anything on Mystery Science Theater, like Manos, The Hands of Fate.
Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
Yes. And the thing is, Manos is Spanish for hands. So the movie title translates to Hands, The Hands of Fate.
Nice.
So, but that's a classic. There's a bunch. But, like, those are well-known, like, in the cults, people who really get into these so bad it's good movies.
Actually,
Neil Breen isn't as well-known. I think it's interesting.
That title reminded me of something that annoyed me about this movie, and that's that the actors kept repeating their line over and over.
A lot. That's why it's hard for me to get through this film in one sitting, because there's so much repetitiveness and like it just never ending. Like one of the things, like how many times does he go to see that therapist, and like why is he seeing the therapist in this giant conference room?
Well, you know, that's the other thing, is he obviously is shooting everything in his house.
Yeah,
because when was the last time you went to a hospital with carpet?
Yeah, you mean to tell me that hospital isn't a real hospital, that it's what do you mean, you're telling me that it's just somebody's living room?
No, I think it's somebody's living room.
Come on.
I think that
come on
where the psychiatrist was, I think was a closet with two chairs in it.
No, like the other one in the beginning, he goes to see him and they're having a talk, but it's like it's this giant conference room. So he's on one end of the conference room and he's the end of the other.
I mean, who has therapy like that?
Yeah, like who goes to a therapist's office?
And
like
why would you set that up visually anyway?
Yeah, it makes no sense.
Yeah,
but it has like since I've seen Double Down, you could kind of get it. Like I said, you've seen one Neil Breen, you've probably seen them all. Like there is this ridiculous fantasy element. Mm-hmm. As in Double Down, he's like this brilliant, of course he's brilliant, he's the best at everything he does in that movie, hacker guy, and he's like also he works with the CIA, but he's also like trying to release anthrax into Las Vegas because he's out in the desert, like just outside Vegas. And anyway, he for some reason he randomly stumbles across this old guy, and he finds this old guy has a stone in his hand, and he gets the stone in his hand. And then he keeps it in his hand. And then he goes to visit, I guess, his family. And one of the daughters has cancer. He touches her on the head, and then he figures out that her cancer's gone, and it's because of the magic rock. And that's never brought up again. He has this, and that's just how it is in this movie. He finds some sort of magic rock, and I don't even know what is it, like that cures something. I don't know.
Yeah, but once he figures that out, like you said, he doesn't walk around with it like glued to his hand at all times. Yeah, it's bizarre. They pick up threads of stories and then just kind of abandon them.
Yeah. Every aspect of this film is terrible. Like they're, I mean, like I said, as bad as The Room is, as bad as Birdemic is, I can at least tell you what the plot is. Somebody says, well, what's the story about The Room? Oh, this love triangle, this guy has an affair with his best friend's fiance. That's the story, pretty much. It's like I said, there's a lot of terrible stuff in it. There's a lot of subplots that are never brought up again. But that's the you can at least follow that plot. Birdemic. Birds going to attack across the world. We focus on this group of people in San Francisco. That's the story. At least you can do that. Like you said, like I just told you with the Fateful Findings, like you struggled to find what was the plot of this movie because he's like, there's this childhood friend. There's like this relationship with his wife that's not going good. He's also trying to like, he's like a author, but he's also trying to like hack into government secrets. Mm-hmm. Like it's completely jumbled.
It is completely jumbled. Yeah, you don't really have any idea of why you should care about this person at all.
Yeah.
And the acting is so bad.
Oh, you mean to tell me that scene when the wife murders the husband wasn't 100% authentic?
No, that's what I'm
really
trying to say.
That really brought me to tears.
My favorite part was, you know, the guy with the glass in his neck. You killed yourself. You committed suicide. I can't believe you committed suicide. I can't help you now. I can't believe you committed suicide.
I can't. I like his lines. I can't get you out of this one.
Awful. Oh, and the whole you know, shower scene where he's bleeding from his wounds in his face with behind a mask that has no air holes.
Yeah.
And then his wife gets in the shower with him without realizing that, you know, it's how much do you have to bleed from your head for it to like flood your shower?
And I love how the fact when he's in the hospital, they have, you know, the oxygen mask is on top of his mask. Like, wait, shouldn't it be underneath it so we can get the oxygen into his mouth and his nose? Like, isn't that what the point of the oxygen mask is?
It couldn't just be a prop.
Yeah.
The other thing were all the feet, because I kept thinking, did he not have the same actors? So he just had to use random people and have them wear the same shoes.
The whole opening scene when he gets into the car accident, there's like so many mistakes like in that one scene. It's incredible. He's talking to her on the phone, yet we never see his mouth move or anything when they cut to him. When she actually answers the phone, she goes, oh, hello. Like there's no vibrating of the phone. There's no ringing or anything. It's just like right there. It's like how lazy do you have to be? Uh-huh. All you had to do was find some little sound effect of a phone ringing and boom. You couldn't even do that.
Couldn't even do that. But the feet thing reminded me of my father-in-law, who had a movie camera back before everybody had one. Mm-hmm. And one time he accidentally left it on. And everybody was walking around, so it's all footage of feet, people walking by. So we still joke about 100 feet of feet. Mm-hmm. But that was a mistake.
That was a mistake.
This was like a conscious choice.
Yeah, and then like there's scenes when he's on the crosswalk, and there's like all these people next to him, and then they cut to the very next shot. He's by himself.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just so much of that in that one scene. And I'll be completely honest with you. I saw this film about 4 months ago, and that was the last time I saw it. I didn't watch it this time. I was going to watch it.
And then you thought, but I want those 2 hours to matter.
Yeah, because I watched last night. I was going to watch it last night, but I had just watched a film called Spirited Away, the Miyazaki film. And that film's absolutely like the antithesis of this movie.
It is.
Like where that film was like, in my opinion, it's perfect in every way, Spirited Away. And I'm like, you know, I just watched this incredible film, one of the greatest films ever made. I don't want to soil that experience by watching this piece of garbage, you know? So I didn't watch it this time, but it sticks into my head. Like, this is a movie, once it's in your head, you don't forget it.
No, I don't think I'm ever going to forget it. Thanks for that, Alex.
Yeah, because I was like, I remember I was telling you so many times, like, okay, now if you can't sit through this, please let me know. We can do an alternate.
You know, it was worse than Birdemic in that, at least with Birdemic, I can figure out a way to use it as what not to do in class, or even a, this is what would happen if you tried to make a Hitchcock movie when you don't know anything, mm-hmm. you know, about filmmaking. I mean, it has its place, but this is just bad. I mean, why would you watch another one of his movies?
It's bad in every way. It's like we said. I actually think that it would be a great idea to show to a film class is like what not to do, because you just, it's like your pick of the litter. Like bad acting, check. Bad editing, check. Plot holes, inconsistent plot holes, check. Poor placement of props, check. Unrealistic settings, check. I mean, just everything. Like,
you know what Birdemic did better in terms of doing it worse was the sound.
That's a good point.
None of the sound matched between, you could tell every place they cut.
Yeah, and bad special effects, because there's not a lot of special effects in this movie.
Well, there's that smoke.
Oh, the smoke.
And the music that goes with it. So you know something supernatural and spooky is, you know, passing through. But it doesn't really seem to matter.
No. Smoke monster. He must have been watching Lost at that
time.
Yes,
I think he must have. Yeah. That's what it made me think of,
and
actually.
And what's interesting, because once again, this also goes down to a lot of Neil Breen films, is that all his films have some sort of political stance, but it's so vague. Other than, like, political corruption is bad. So it's like there's nothing, like, you can clearly say, oh, right wing or, oh, left wing. It's just very vague because, okay, political corruption is bad. Everyone knows that political corruption is bad.
But I love how, you know, one of his targets apparently is the bank.
Yeah, I am resigning today as president of the bank.
The bank.
Like, okay. It's just such a well-known bank that you just need to say the bank.
Well, there's only one.
Yeah.
Yeah. The bank. Capital T, capital B.
It's like he fancies himself like a Julian Assange in this movie, because he hacks into corporate secrets and he's like, these politicians that lie to you. And he's like, of course, he reveals all this powerful information that it like causes everybody to like either resign or commit suicide or both. And like even the politicians like even like get up on the thing, the American people deserve much better than us, because that's what a politician
would
do
say,
because they would definitely like deface themselves like that,
right?
But it is, and like that's another Neil Breen thing, because he was also doing a lot of that in Double Down, kind of once again he was like, I am tired of the corruption and everything inside this government, and so he decides to like spread anthrax in Las Vegas, and the way he does it is hilarious. So he grabs it looks like baking soda or something. He just grabs a handful of it. He's like walking down the streets in Vegas, and he goes, oh, excuse me. And then he just like slaps it on this one guy's elbow. I'm like, yeah, he's going to notice that. That's you can't really be, you know, discreet about something like that.
Yeah.
And then, oh, I forgot the other film he did. It wasn't Twisted Pair. I forget. It was like the film he did like 2 years ago. Once again, Neil Breen filmography here. But he's like able to sneak himself into like all these like the meetings of like the rich and elite or the government elite, and they're all corrupt, and they're blatantly just spilling out like, here's how we, you know, subjugate, you know, the poor in this country, or do this and this. And then like he just sits there and, you know, after they're done saying, he goes, isn't that corrupt? And next scene, and it's just like the same thing. And he doesn't say anything profound or anything. He just goes, isn't that corrupt?
Well, it's almost like a Scooby-Doo mystery, because, you know, that it's very simplistic. You know, there's bad guys, you know, with a capital B, capital G. And, you know, actually, I'm no fan of Julian Assange, but he's a man of distinction and class next to the character in this movie. He has some finesse.
Yeah. I mean, Julian Assange probably didn't need it like 700 laptops.
Right.
None of which were running, by the way.
And what was the deal with throwing things? It seemed like they were throwing things all the time in this movie for action.
Once again, Neil Breen. Like, his another trademark of Neil Breen is overabundance of laptops. Because I remember watching Double Down, because he's like this hacker, but he's like operating in the desert. He's like, he's got this van, and it's got like 7 laptops. None of them are plugged into anything, and none of them are on. And then he's got like 5 different satellites hooked up in his car.
What is that about?
I think he once again, he probably doesn't know anything about technology. So he probably thinks, oh, So if I'm this brilliant hacker, I've got like 7 different laptops.
Well, at least have them all on with the fake screen. Yeah. You know, like the one that you put in a fingerprint and it scans like Interpol for you.
Yeah, something
Something like that.
You don't mean to tell me when he's just going like that it does, it's not realistic?
Well, you know what else? He's supposed to be this famous writer, but the man cannot articulate to save his life. Where is he getting this writing talent?
No, and that's the thing. Like, what is exactly is he writing?
Right.
Well, she says, like, oh, he's writing something about government secrets. Like, no, he's just hacking and goes into a public speaking. Like, what book has he written? You don't really get any of that.
No, you don't. Another plot hole that just...
There's so many plot holes. Like I said, plot holes so big you could drive a Mack truck through them. It is, like I guess, he is a very, like you said, he's delusional. And the thing is, I was reading about him is that, I'm not sure if he still is, but he was originally a real estate agent, and he is also an architect. Now, I wonder, when I think of architect, what does he just make statues of himself? That would make sense, but...
You know, I could sort of see him being an introverted architect who slaves over some blueprints and comes up with, you know, the one house that's all you'll ever need to make a movie in. Mm-hmm. But I really can't see him selling real estate because he's so deadpan and he just seems so bored with his own self that I can't imagine
selling a house. How could you not buy this house?
How could you not buy this
house? I can't believe you didn't buy this house.
I can't help you.
Can't get you out of this one. That's my favorite line of the movie. He's like, how could you commit suicide? I can't believe you committed suicide. And then he just says, I can't get you out of this one, buddy. It's like,
yeah, it's almost
really,
campy.
You can't.
Who would say that while cradling their dead friend? And
Yeah. With so much emotion. Overcome with just ridiculous amount of emotion. What else can we say about Neil Breen?
Well, why is Neil Breen a favorite in the cult circuit as opposed to somebody else? I mean, what's unique about what he brings to this? As opposed to the guy who did The Room or something like Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, which you know you're supposed to laugh at, or even the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Well, okay. I was comparing him to Tommy Wiseau, like I always say, when it comes to what makes a So Bad It's Good movie, I think a lot of it comes down to the filmmaker is a bit delusional and he thinks he's making something brilliant. He probably thinks he was making this movie and it would get people to, you know, fight against political corruption in whatever kind of way. And he probably thinks he fancies himself as this brilliant filmmaker making all of these subtle, you know, metaphors and everything. He thinks he's probably a brilliant filmmaker. And that's what makes him such a revered figure in the So Bad It's Good movement of, you know, fans.
But if you're going to make a movie about hacking, you have to do some of those cool screenshots of what it looks like and what you're finding.
And the fact that he has absolutely no screenshots, that's what makes it so hilarious.
So lame.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it makes the plot not work.
Mm-hmm. And just...
and besides, we're not going to rise up against, you know, the corrupt politicians because we don't have lucky rocks.
No,
where's
lucky
our magical
rocks.
Day?
We don't have 7 different laptops.
That we can throw things at?
Yeah. They just become props. Like, he's like drinking a coffee or something. He's like... Yeah.
How do you know when it's, what's the line between it's so bad it's good and it's so bad it's just bad?
When you're laughing.
Okay.
When there's memorable things. Like I say, tell me you cannot laugh of like when the scene where he goes, I can't get you out of this one, buddy.
Good point.
Even the whole ending scene when, you know, the people are committing suicide right in front of a press conference and people are clapping and cheering in the background. And then, like, all of a sudden, there's a sniper in the background trying to kill Neil Breen, and then he gets shot. Who kills him? Who takes him out? We never see it.
See, I was kind of rooting for the sniper.
Yeah. Like, that's what makes when you're laughing. I agree, this movie can be a bit hard to sit through.
Well, while I was watching it, I wondered if there was a drinking game or something that was the reason why people liked the movie.
There can be a drinking game. Like, drink how many times there's a laptop.
Drink every time you see a foot shot of somebody's feet.
Any bad editing error, like, you know, him, they're on the phone, yet you never see him talking once, or his mouth moved to at least mimic that he's talking.
Or the mask, you know, the bandages don't have any way to let you breathe through the nose or mouth.
Bad acting by child actors. That remember the scene when they're waving goodbye to each other? Like, that is the worst waving I've seen. How do you screw that up? All you got to do is go, you know, bye. Uh-huh. And like the girl's just going like this, and half the time she's like going like this. I'm like, what is this, Nazi Germany?
Yeah, it's like the only directing advice he gave everybody was just to ham it up.
And like, yeah, there was like half of the times I thought, oh, like you almost felt like I was watching a porno with the bad acting. And like, you know, you got this, one of the neighbors is very top heavy, I'll say that. And I'm like, what kind of movie am I watching again?
You know what else is so bad it's good is Superstar, which is Todd Haynes directed, I believe.
Oh, the Karen Carpenter
thing. Karen Carpenter story, which is, oh, terrible. Absolutely awful. And, you know, it's hard to find because they used the music from the Carpenters without getting the clearances, whatever. So that kind of took it out of circulation. But if you look, you can find a copy. And it is one of the worst. But it's clever because at least they're telling the stories with Barbie dolls. I mean, that's never been done before. And he took the Barbie dolls and even shaved some of them down with a razor so he could, you know, make her get thinner and thinner.
Yeah.
But awful. Oh, my God, awful.
Yeah.
But the whole time you're watching it, you're thinking, but it's Barbie dolls. I mean, your level
there's
of expectation
in terms
of acting, for example, is not going to be the same.
Yeah. Closing up a little bit of our talk about what makes it so bad, it's good movie. Like I said, the big thing is when you think of movies that are just bad, I think of something just like movie 43 might be the worst film I've ever seen. And that has like a bunch of famous people. It's got Kate Winslet, Hugh Jackman, Emma Stone, Halle Berry, Elizabeth Banks, a bunch of other people I'm probably forgetting. Liev Schreiber, Naomi Watts. There's
good
a
grief.
Bunch. Yeah, a bunch of people. That movie is the worst film I've ever seen. It's probably as bad as this movie.
Wow.
But no, movie 43, it's like this sort of vignette movie of like all these different stories, but it is absolutely awful. But that film was just bad. It's not funny at all. There's no so bad it's good redeeming qualities. I felt miserable watching it. I hated every aspect of that film. I would much rather watch this movie where I can at least laugh at how inept and terrible it is and have a good time instead of watching that movie and just feeling miserable.
You know what else had everybody you can think of in it and was awful? It was Cloud Atlas.
Oh, you didn't like
what
that movie?
What a snooze. Did you watch it?
No, I've heard like some people like it's a very divisive film. Some people think it's brilliant. Like other people like you just, you know, they think it's awful.
Boring. The book was boring too. But there's so many people in it that you like to watch.
Yeah.
You think it would carry the movie, but it doesn't. So sometimes that's what makes it even worse.
Yeah. All right, we're getting close to the end of my questions here. Anything you else want to bring up about the genius of Neil Breen?
I think Neil Breen and I are done. I think I'm going to leave him there.
Take a pass.
Yeah, I appreciate that he was very earnest and sincere. Yeah,
but he's the best at everything
movie.
He does.
Right. Somehow I missed that memo.
Yeah, he's the best. All right, then last question I'll have is tell us a little bit about your classes.
I teach Intro to Film and World Cinema and American Cinema every semester. I don't think I will be using this as an example of anything other than maybe what not to do. Mm-hmm. For any students who want to enter, you know, film contests, obviously, you can make something this bad and put something out there without feeling too ashamed.
Neil Breen like tours all around the world, or all around the country at least.
And when people go to see him, do they treat him with respect or is he a joke?
I don't know. They cheer him and go crazy. He probably thinks, oh, it's because I'm a brilliant filmmaker, but like they know, oh, he's just because these movies are so terrible, but yet so enjoyable.
See, I find that somebody like John Waters, when he does introduce movies or whatever, he's always very self-effacing. He's in on the joke.
Neil Breen definitely isn't.
Not in on the joke. Yes, he is not in on the joke.
All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been discussing director Neil Breen and his 2013 film Fateful Findings. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at dragonditchradio.podbean.com in the category Armchair Directors. Be sure to listen online to hear the shows a week before they're on Podbean. Professor Westhaver, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
The Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying, I want to be honest with all of you. I have been hacking into government and corporate systems all over the country, all over the world. I have discovered more information than any hacker has ever. What I have found will shock you. Here are the files and supporting documents and supporting truths, the factual documents. I'm releasing these files to the public today.